Hey, what is going on with y'all, man? Look, it's Black Balloon, and we are coming back with a very interesting video. A video that I'm excited to bring to the channel. A video that I have actually learned a lot about, you know. A lot of this stuff I'm going to show y'all in this video, you know, I would like to think it's the real history of Antarctica. It's the real history of why Admiral Byrd went on an expedition to Antarctica. Who was actually there first, who built a secret base there first, which was the Third Reich, the Nazis, Germany, you know, and it just really goes into the history of everything. This is not a video of, you know, speculation. We're not here to, you know, oh, the secrets of Antarctica, what are they actually hiding in Antarctica? Like, this is not one of those generic YouTube videos. We're going to really go into the history of Antarctica, what we believe it to be, what we don't believe it to be, and the deception behind Antarctica, because you can't believe anything that the U.S. gives you. You know, our country, our government, they like to play with your brain. You know, they like to, you know, let you think you actually know what is going on. But in this video, we really find the truth. We really find the history of Antarctica. It has 90% to do with the Third Reich, Nazis. They are, you know, the most involved in it. They built a secret base there first. And it is partly the reason why Admiral Byrd and, you know, the U.S. sent them on an expedition to go to Antarctica in the first place. So this video is very detailed. I do have some clips in this video that comes from a Russian documentary about the Third Reich and, you know, their UFOs and the history on Antarctica. Now, we've talked about the Third Reich and their UFOs in the previous video, but this goes a lot deeper into it. You know, this is why I haven't, this is why I waited. I put that video out first so people could watch that video. Then we're going to go a little bit deeper into the Third Reich UFOs and Antarctica and why all of this stuff was done in the first place. So, a good portion of this video is going to be from a Russian documentary, so it's not in English. It is subtitled, so you have to pay attention. You have to watch the entire thing. You can't take your eyes off of it because it's subtitled, so you're going to have to read the subtitles and watch the video, or you're going to miss something important if you don't pay attention to it. Now, I chose this video because it absolutely holds the truth. You know, I didn't want to get something that was like cupcake and that was beaten around it. This video, the documentary that I found, is the real truth. Now, I do have another one that's completely in English. A few more clips that's completely in English, and it'll go with the regular style of the video. But I just wanted to let y'all know what y'all were going to be watching and what this video is going to be about. I think it's going to be really interesting. So with that being said, let's jump into the first clip.
So we were originally talking about the spiriting out of the two spacecraft out of Berlin before the Allies arrived. We said that they were put aboard two submarines. They spent 6 months at sea, and they finally landed in Argentina. Now, from that point, they were taken into Antarctica, into a section of Antarctica called Queen's Maud's Land. And there they disappeared, and they were not heard of for some time. Now, intelligence sources, and of course I was in the intelligence business at that time with the agency, reports indicated that they were in there and they were operative once again. Now, there was a major concern by world powers to go in and capture the technology and the two spacecraft, which they knew were in Antarctica. And the intelligence reports indicated that one known as Admiral Byrd was to be recommissioned, and he was to be sent in there to retrieve the two saucers and also the technology and personnel associated with it. Later reports indicated that Admiral Byrd was given 8 months and unlimited funding to go in and pull this thing successfully off. But we also know that within 8 weeks, he was totally defeated. Now, the supposition at that point was that there was an advanced civilization and technology, most probably alien. There were with the Third Reich and the SS who was in Antarctica, and that those great and developed technologies were used to defeat Admiral Byrd. And of course, as it turns out, even to date, they're still there. We never did successfully get them.
Now, that first clip already provides us with some history. And the real reason Admiral Byrd went on an expedition to Antarctica, and I won't even call it an expedition, he went on a mission. They went on a mission. It was clear they went to find two of basically the flying saucers that the Third Reich were already producing. Intelligence agencies in the U.S. got word that some of their top scientists and engineers, they were completely missing. They weren't coming up as dead. They weren't coming up as relocated. A lot of them, you know, I think a lot of this was right before Operation Paperclip or right around the same time. So all of the Nazi scientists and engineers, they didn't come to the U.S. on Operation Paperclip. A lot of them went to Antarctica in the secret base. Once U.S. got, you know, once the U.S. got word of that, they sent Admiral Byrd and his team on a mission to actually also destroy the secret base that the Third Reich had built, and to also recover the two flying saucers, the technology, and the people that were associated with advancing the technology the way that it was, because we obviously weren't on anything like that. And, you know, they were basically responsible for building the first flying saucers. So that's something people completely miss. You know, I'm pretty sure there's some, you know, good history buffs out there, people that like to look into this kind of stuff. But when we mostly hear about Admiral Byrd, all we hear about is his expedition to Antarctica and the hollow earth theory, you know, him seeing vegetation, mammoths, all kind of stuff that he supposedly wrote in his diary. And then the clip that's been completely scrubbed off the internet, which I tried to find to add to this video, but I couldn't find it. It's very hard to find that original audio that he did back in 1954, I think. It was 54 or 55. So that I couldn't find to have a supporting clip in this video. But that first clip, just to start off, tells us a lot. Already gives us the true history. They went, they had an 8-month mission to get the job done. They were sent back in 8 weeks, 2 months, in which the rumor was he wasn't actually sent back, you know, by fighting with the Third Reich and the Nazis. He was actually sent back by the civilization that basically inhabit the inner earth and that inhabit that area of Antarctica, the access point where Antarctica is. So the story goes that two flying saucers basically flew out of the water and started attacking Admiral Byrd and his team. Now, the Third Reich, they didn't take ownership of what happened because their technology, their flying saucers, were not that advanced yet. So this had to be something that was, you know, completely outside of this realm. Technology that we were not yet capable of. So that is the real reason why the mission was cut short. But we're going to get into that more. We're going to get into that more as the video goes on. He was also funded on that trip by John D. Rockefeller. Now, in my mind, I believe Admiral Byrd to be a Freemason. I don't think he would have done all the things he did and, you know, was even chosen to go on that trip. You know, although he was an admiral at that time, you know, I really do think he was a Mason, and that is why he was able to see the things that he did. And he held a lot of secrets as well. But without me continuing to go on and spoil what's coming up next in the video, we're going to check out more about the Third Reich. So check this out.
The stories that I have uncovered about the inner earth is that very early on in the history of the Third Reich, the Nazi elite and especially Hitler were trying to establish contact with a civilization living in the inner earth, which was considered an Aryan civilization of a lot more advanced nature than their brothers, lost brothers living on the surface of the planet. The Thule society carries the name of the former capital of that civilization, someplace around present-day Greenland, before the previous polar shifts and before Greenland became under ice. Two expeditions were made in the late 30s, early 40s, one attempting to enter the North Polar water opening with a submarine, which proved unsuccessful. A second attempt was made to enter the land opening on the South Pole with an anti-gravity cigar-shaped device, basically a small prototype probably of the giant Andromeda space station that was developed later on by the SS, and it proved successful. The most interesting story is the one that I heard by an American living in Florida who claims to have spent 2 months in the city of New Berlin. This is a city that was developed into the inner earth, and a part of the Germans from the South Polar colony were admitted by the inner earthlings and were allowed to build that city there. Very strict admission procedures, no previous SS members, no previous concentration camp guards and so on were admitted. The rumor is that the present-day city of New Berlin is about 2 million people of population, that they have built there most of the buildings that Hitler's personal architect, Spee, was planning to build. They're traveling on Icelandic passports. They are basically the new master race that is probably planned by the Illuminati to repopulate the planet. And there is even a rumor that there is a New Berlin embassy in Washington on an unmarked floor of a high-rise building. You probably punch a code on the elevator buttons, and when the elevator stops on that floor and the doors open, you see the sign of New Berlin in the lobby. The kids of the New Berliners study in major institutions around the globe, Harvard, Oxford, Cambridge, Yale, and basically it is not a Nazi colony that is established in the hollow earth as an enemy of the present-day American and English Illuminati secret government. On the contrary, it is just basically the other side of the same coin. Some would even coin the new word, the Illuminati presence on the planet, that basically the World War II Nazis and the present-day Illuminatis in America are nothing more than the two sides of the same Illuminati coin. So basically, this is a colony, a presence in the hollow earth that has been established with a shoulder-to-shoulder cooperation of the Russians and Americans, organized, orchestrated, and performed through the quiet cooperation of the Illuminati government.
In my work with South African, Brazilian, and American geologists at the South Pole, it is clear that under the structures of ice, there are many layers of civilization, suggesting at one earlier point of time, when the conditions of the South Pole were different, clearly there was some type of civilization there. The evidences of huge dinosaur intelligence suggest that this was one of the possible places for the Garden of Eden. This, of course, is assuming that the shell of the Earth had a different north and south magnetic pole. And with the shifting of the pole, this region became suddenly very, very frigid. And thus, we do not see any evidences on the surface of these so-called earlier conditions of intelligence. However, I believe with the further exploration of the documents that both Admiral Byrd brought to the attention of the world after World War II, and the Brazilian Navy uncovered in 1961 with its sub-pole expedition, that extraterrestrial intelligence is also operated out of the area of the South Pole. And in that sense, the South Pole is a connecting point with other civilizations. possible extrasolar gardens of paradise.
Now, if you heard in the beginning of that clip, he talked about the Thule Society, however you want to pronounce it. And this was basically a secret society that were, you know, it was kind of like pre-Nazi. So it was basically a lot of the, you know, top generals in the Third Reich. And they were in different sections of these secret societies. So the Thule Society, they were like kind of like an inner circle of the Vril Society as well. Now, you know, they had about three or four secret societies. Kind of the most two talked about would be the Thule Society and the Vril Society. Now, we have to understand that the Third Reich and, you know, their engineers, their scientists, their occultists, they were deeply rooted in seeking ancient occultic knowledge. And I mean deeply rooted in it. Really deeply rooted. And, you know, researching this stuff, you know, I was amazed at reading some of the things that I have come across. I found a book that was, you know, it was basically wrote. It was wrote basically to describe the secret, you know, Vril Society. I think the book was called The Coming Race, which was the name of the book. It was called The Coming Race. Basically describes the Vril Society, right? The book described them as beings that called themselves Vrilya, V-R-I-L-ya, Vrilya. And they were telepathic. They had the abilities to transmit information, get rid of pain, and put others to sleep. So it says the narrator soon discovers that the Vrilya are descendants of an antediluvian civilization, if I said that right, called the Ana, who live in networks of caverns linked by tunnels. Originally surface dwellers, they fled underground thousands of years ago to escape a massive flood and gain greater power by facing and dominating the harsh conditions of the earth. The place where the narrator descended houses 12,000 families, one of the largest groups. Their society is a technology-supported utopia, chief among their tools being an all-permeating fluid called Vril, a latent source of energy that the spiritually elevated hosts are able to master through training of their will to a degree that depends on their hereditary constitution. This mastery gives them access to an extraordinary force that can be controlled at will. It is this fluid that the Vril employ to communicate. The powers of the Vril include the ability to heal, change, and destroy beings and things. The destructive powers in particular are immense, allowing a few Vril to destroy entire cities if it's necessary. They believe in the permeance of life, which according to them, life is not destroyed. It just changes form. And that is where the energy, the Vril energy, comes into hand, because we know energy does not die. Energy just basically it just transform. It just goes on to the next. Now, I thought it was very interesting because it says, Thule, the name, was actually coined to be the farthest north ancient landmass near Greenland or Iceland. So that is basically where the name comes from. And it's a proverbial expression for the edge of the known world. So just the name in itself makes it, you know, very interesting. And it gives you an idea of what these people were actually into and the knowledge that they held, the knowledge that they seeked. You know, if you look hard enough, you will find your answers. It gets more interesting. And I think I had it backwards. The Thule Society wasn't an inside sect of the Vril Society. The Vril Society was actually an inside sect of the Thule Society. Whichever one, you know, they were all damn near the same. All right. But look, we're gonna keep reading because it gets deeper. It gets deeper, right? So it does say real society was a secret community of occultists in pre-Nazi Berlin that was sort of the inner circle of the Thule Society. Okay, so the Thule Society was kind of the main sect, right? It also says they were in close contact with the English group known as the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. Now, if y'all been on this channel for a long time, we have talked about the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn because that goes right back to guess who? You guessed it, Aleister Crowley. Now, Aleister Crowley is probably the most famous member that people know of, you know, our age today, because he's connected to, you know, the music industry so much. He called himself the Beast 666. He represented, you know, that energy. And I believe he joined the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn in like 1890s, in the 1890s. Now, the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn is also basically derived from the organization of the Rosicrucians. So this lets you know how deep this occultic knowledge was involved with the Vril and Thule Society. And the fact that the Third Reich, they even named their flying saucers after Vril. You know, it was like Vril H, Vril whatever. Basically, Vril was always the first name, and then it was kind of abbreviated after that to show you that they were mastering this ancient knowledge, this ancient occultic knowledge, and they were actually getting this knowledge from seeking it. Right now, here we're going to go a little bit more into the Vril Society, just to kind of get the proper knowledge about it, right? Because I was just kind of skimming and going over things when I was just talking about it. So we're going to get into this article real quick, right? So it says the Vril Society is an alleged secret society many believe gave birth to the Nazi Party. Now, the reason I'm going into this is, you know, before I continue reading, I just want us to be well, you know, well versed in the occultic knowledge that they were seeking. You know, all of this has to do with Antarctica. It all has to do with the firmament. It all has to do with trying to get out of the firmament. Everything is connected together. So that's why we have to go back and dig up the roots. All right. So it says it's an alleged secret society many believe gave birth to the Nazi Party. The World War II era was a time where many mysteries were created. So this was especially true about Nazi Germany. For many historians, the Vril Society remains a prime example of how truly bizarre some of the rumors about the Nazi regime were. For occult researchers, the Vril Society quickly became an example of how technology and magic can be used for evil. Named after a popular 19th century novel by the name of the Vril, The Power of the Coming Race, which I just got done reading a page from that book. The book was widely appreciated throughout the English-speaking world and talked about an anti-Devilian race that had access to a highly advanced energy source called Vril. The Vrilia, the race who lived underground, supposedly had telepathic powers. I'm sorry, y'all, we're just going to go over this again. Highly advanced technology and were able to do incredible amounts of damage simply by using a Vril wand. The superior ancient race that had control of the Vril would run out of habitable spaces underground and that they would move up to the surface world. Since many people at the time believed in the possibility of an antediluvian race, there were people who accepted the coming race as fact instead of fiction. So it basically propelled the idea of the Vril Society into the realm of potential reality. Much of the Vril Society's work was supposed to have happened before World War II, with the society's activity tapering off once Hitler lost the war. Originally connected to secret societies such as the Thule Society, which I just explained, and other similar societies tied to Nazi occultism, the Vril Society quickly became the stuff of legend among those who'd heard the rumors of the super technology associated with this mysterious sect. Since one of the most bizarre issues about the Vril Society was how little was written about it during what would have been their most active years, much of the written accounts of the rumors of the Vril Society were first found in a book by Louis Pauls and Jacques Berger in 1967. Now you have to imagine little was written about it because the people that founded the Thule Society and the Vril, they were Freemasons. So, you know, they dwell in secrecy. So, you know, they're not going to allow much to come out. That's why people didn't know if it was real or fiction. So it keeps going on to say, unfortunately, for those who are curious to find out the truth about some of the more out there Nazi rumors, neither of the authors of that book basically said rather it was fictional or fact or sheer speculation, which we all know most of it was fact. Prior to the 1967 book, the only mention of anything close to the Vril Society was in 1947 by a German defector who spoke of a society that searched for the Vril in Berlin. All right. According to those who have researched the Vril Society at length, this secret society was initially established as the All-German Society for Metaphysics, headed by a medium by the name of Maria Orsic and another medium who only went by the name of Sigrun. Now, that's pretty interesting. These two definitely look like witches, especially the one to the left. These two mediums had gotten into contact with Aryan aliens and were given the goal of spaceflight to reach the Aryan home planet of Aldebaran. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. Many of the original members were also active in the Thule Society, which was known to be an occult movement around the turn of the century. In some circles, the names were used interchangeably, which that was kind of like my little mishap earlier. Basically, you know, they were the same thing, you know, in a nutshell. Unlike many secret societies, people who have heard about the actions of the Vril Society were quick to admit that the group's highly focused programs went into effect faster than anyone could have imagined. Officially, the Vril Society was first really founded in 1921. Long ago, people, long ago. By the end of 1922, the Vril Society had supposedly created their first flying disc, also known as the Otherworld Flight Machine, that was meant to be a test for interplanetary flight. The pace of technology creation, invention, and communication with high-ranking Nazi personnel was shocking to everyone who had heard of them. So, people, in 1921 and 1922, they had already, you know, amassed the knowledge and technology to create a flying disc. Now, what do you think? Where do you think they saw this stuff from? You have to remember, the brain cannot just think of something that it's never seen. You know, you can't just think, hey, I'm gonna make a flying disc. You don't just think of it out of nowhere. You have to see it from somewhere in order for it to come into your mind as a thought. So that right there means that they were already seeing UFOs. They had already seen this stuff. So continue. Much of the heavy communication with government officials in Germany was facilitated by the fact that society's members were often high-ranking officials. Adolf Hitler was obviously one of the supposed members of the sect. All right. It should come as no surprise that two of the other members of Vril received government money for their flying saucer work, and that yet another member designed the Nazi flag was associated with both the Thule and Vril societies. By the early 1940s, people had begun to suspect Hitler's involvement in secret societies practicing the occult. In order to save face, he basically banned all secret societies, and those people of the Vril Society were quickly joined into the Nazi EIV unit. The Vril Society was credited with the construction of multiple flying discs and working in conjunction with the Nazis' occult unit. Other units were developed in order to cover up sightings of the alien replica craft reported by soldiers, civilians, and people who lived in other countries. 1945 marked the year when the Vril Magic Eye was developed. Now, this is very interesting. The Magic Eye was supposedly a highly accurate Nazi reconnaissance and espionage device that had a probe that could appear and disappear at will. A device that had a probe that could appear and disappear at will, as well as arc through dimensions, spy at any location at any time. That sounds crazy. In 1945, a Vril Magic Eye, a highly accurate Nazi reconnaissance and espionage device that had a probe that could appear and disappear at will, as well as arc through dimensions and spy at any location at any time. That sounds crazy. Now it says to end it off, after the war and the defeat of the Nazi regime, the Vril Society supposedly escaped to Antarctica, where they remain to this day. Where they remain to this day, people. Nowadays, the only actual news or hearings of the Vril Society comes from the exiled government of Sealand, which currently promotes Vril Free Energy and Vril Disc aircraft. This supports allegations that the head of the Sealand is in contact with modern-day neo-Nazis. No one knows for sure whether or not the Vril Society ever really existed, and blah, blah, blah. So we know this is partly, you know, this goes back to, you know, what they're actually covering up in Antarctica, what actually goes on today. We know they all work together now on one goal. Back then, it was all kind of separated. The Germans, the Nazis, they were on to it first in Antarctica and, you know, trying to achieve the technology that they were basically seeking back then through magic and through ancient occult knowledge. All right. So I just wanted to go over that with y'all just to kind of like, you know, get a direct article so it's not all over the place. But I think we've covered this section of the video very well. And remember, I do have a documentary that's going to be a major portion of this video. It's probably going to be the longest video I ever did. May have to split this into two parts. But I do have a section of this video that is going to be from a Russian documentary. It is not in English, so you're going to have to pay attention to the subtitles. You know, please pay attention because you're going to miss something. And it is very good. Like, you don't want to miss it. Just watch it. It's very interesting. You know, sit down, pay attention to it, and y'all let me know what y'all think. All right. So check this out.
Начало 1947 года. Очередная экспедиция легендарного американского полярника Ричарда Бёрда подошла к берегам Антарктиды. Очень странная экспедиция. В отличие от первых трех, она полностью финансируется военно-морскими силами США и имеет военное название «Операция High Jump» – «Высокий прыжок».
В подчинении адмирала Бёрда мощная военно-морская группировка, авианосец, 12 надводных кораблей, подводная лодка, более двух десятков самолетов и вертолетов, около 5000 человек персонала. Согласитесь, странный состав для научной экспедиции.
2 декабря 1946 года перед выходом эскадры в антарктический поход адмирал Бёрд на встрече с прессой заметил: «Моя экспедиция имеет военный характер». О подробностях он не сказал ни слова.
В конце января 1947 года началась авиаразведка антарктического континента в районе земли Королевы Мод.
Все идет по плану. За первые недели сделаны десятки тысяч аэрофотоснимков. И вдруг происходит нечто загадочное. Экспедиция, рассчитанная на полгода, уже через два месяца спешно сворачивается и покидает берега Антарктиды. Это настоящее бегство.
Потерян эсминец. Почти половина палубной авиации, десятки матросов и офицеров. Членам чрезвычайной следственной комиссии Конгресса США адмирал Бёрд заявил буквально следующее. В случае новой войны Америка может подвергнуться атаке врага, обладающего способностью летать с одного полюса на другой с невероятной скоростью.
Кто поверг в бегство американскую эскадру? За полтора года до экспедиции адмирала Бёрда летом 45-го в аргентинский порт Мар-дель-Плата вошли и сдались властям две немецкие подводные лодки. Необычные лодки. Лодки из состава так называемого конвоя фюрера.
Это сверхсекретное соединение выполняло задачи, подробности которых до сих пор остаются в глубокой тайне.
Экипажи подлодок показания давали неохотно. И все-таки американцам удалось кое-что узнать. Так командир У-530 рассказал о своем участии в операции под кодовым названием «Валькирия-2».
За три недели до конца войны подводная лодка У-530 вышла из киля и взяла курс на Антарктиду. На борту подводной лодки находились пассажиры, лица которых были закрыты повязками, а также реликвии Третьего Рейха.
Командир другой лодки, У-977, Хайнц Шефер, показал, что немного позднее повторил этот же маршрут. Выяснилось также, что немецкие подлодки неоднократно ходили в Антарктиду. Но почему именно туда? Антарктида. В 1820 году ее открыли русские мореплаватели Беллинсгаузен и Лазарев. С тех пор этот загадочный континент, по площади превышающий Европу, как магнитом притягивает к себе исследователей. Однако отвесные, высотой в десятки метров ледяные берега долгое время делают материк неприступным. Еще целое столетие об Антарктиде почти ничего не известно. На карты нанесены лишь береговые линии. И вдруг к далекому и бесполезному ледяному континенту проявляет непонятный интерес Германия. На изучение Антарктиды выделены огромные средства.
В конце 30-х годов организованы две научно-исследовательских экспедиции. И это перед войной, готовой разразиться со дня на день.
С января 39-го года два самолета «Пассат» и «Борей», которые с помощью катапульт взлетают с борта Швабии, начинают разведку земли королевы Мод. За три недели летчики Люфтваффе с помощью металлических вымпелов со знаком свастики застолбили за Третьим Рейхом территорию величиной с Германию. Она получила название «Новая Швабия». В апреле 1939 года командир экспедиции, опытный полярный капитан Альфред Ритшер, рапортует: «Я выполнил миссию, возложенную на меня маршалом Герингом. Впервые германские самолеты пролетели над антарктическим континентом. Каждые 25 километров наши самолеты сбрасывали вымпелы. Мы покрыли зону приблизительно в 600 тысяч квадратных километров. Из них 350 тысяч были сфотографированы». Воздушные асы Геринга сделали свое дело. Загадочную эстафету принимают морские волки фюрера подводных лодок адмирала Карла Дёнитса. За 3-9 земель к берегам ледяной Антарктиды скрытно направляются немецкие субмарины. А через некоторое время Дёнитс роняет странную фразу: «Мои подводники обнаружили настоящий земной рай».
В 1943 году, в разгар войны с Россией, гросс-адмирал Дёнитс произносит еще одну не менее загадочную фразу. «Подводный флот Германии может гордиться, что на другом конце света он создал неприступную крепость для фюрера».
Тогда главнокомандующего военно-морским флотом Германии понимал очень узкий круг лиц. Сегодня мы можем предположить, что имел в виду гросс-адмирал. Не так давно в Антарктиде под километровым слоем льда обнаружены огромные озера. Температура воды в них плюс 18 градусов. Над поверхностью воды находятся куполообразные своды, заполненные теплым воздухом. Не исключено, что из этих озер, постоянно подогреваемых снизу, в океан вытекают настоящие реки теплой воды. За тысячи лет они могли создать подо льдом и под землей огромные туннели, вполне пригодные для устройства тайных баз. Со стороны океана, поднырнув под прибрежными льдами, туда может спокойно зайти любая подводная лодка. Вот вам и готовая база. Без штормов и полярных холодов. Абсолютно скрытая от постороннего глаза. Вне досягаемости для любого противника.
Если бы немцы решили разместить какие-то секретные базы создать или секретные зоны, которые как бы имели статус экстерриториальности, то полярные зоны, в том числе Антарктида, была совершенно естественным районом нахождения подобного рода баз или анклавов.
Судя по обнаруженным документам и воспоминаниям участников событий, нацисты на самом деле создавали в Антарктиде сверхсекретную базу. Она носила кодовое название «База 211». Уже с начала 1939 года между Антарктидой и Германией начинаются регулярные рейсы специально переоборудованного исследовательского судна «Швабия». На землю королевы Мод перевозится горнопроходческое оборудование и другая техника, в том числе рельсовые дороги, вагонетки и огромные фрезы для проходки тоннелей. Туда же прибывают ученые, инженеры, высококвалифицированные рабочие. Для чего Германии была нужна столь удаленная база? Предположения высказываются разные. Одни полагают, что с ее помощью немцы хотели контролировать южные моря. Другие считают, что Германию привлекали полезные ископаемые Антарктиды, особенно уран, без которого невозможно создание сверхоружия. А кто-то утверждает, что на случай проигрыша в войне в Антарктиде готовилось убежище для элиты Третьего Рейха. И что якобы уже с 1942 года в Новую Швабию началась переброска ее будущих жителей. Не только ученых и специалистов, но и представителей нацистской партии и государства. И что туда же из Германии переносятся некие секретные производства. После войны американцы, активно вербовавшие немецких ученых для работы в Соединенных Штатах, с удивлением обнаружили, что тысячи высококвалифицированных специалистов Третьего Рейха бесследно исчезли. Исчезло и более сотни подводных лодок. Среди погибших они не числились.
Возможно, американская разведка действительно располагала какими-то сведениями о том, что часть какого-то наследия, технического потенциала, ученые, действительно была вывезена из Германии. И естественно, что антарктические полярные зоны оказывались в поле зрения их внимания.
А тут еще показания немецких подводников, сдавшихся аргентинским властям. По всей видимости, все это чрезвычайно встревожило американцев. И в конце 1946 года знаменитый полярник и одновременно адмирал американских военно-морских сил Ричард Бёрд получает приказ уничтожить нацистскую базу в Антарктиде. Но не тут-то было. Отпор, который получила американская эскадра, до сих пор вызывает массу вопросов. Дело в том, что в Вашингтоне адмирал Бёрд докладывал не просто об истребителях с немыслимыми возможностями. Он говорил о нападении на экспедицию странных летающих тарелок, которые выныривали из-под воды и, двигаясь с огромной скоростью, нанесли экспедиции значительный урон. Вот как описывает этот бой, который произошел 26 февраля 1947 года, другой его очевидец. Участник экспедиции – опытный военный летчик Джон Сайерсон. Они выскакивали из-под воды, как угорелые, и проскальзывали буквально между мачтами кораблей с такой скоростью, что потоками возмущенного воздуха рвало радиоантенны. Несколько корсаров успели взлететь с Касабланки. Я не успел и глазом моргнуть, как два из них, сраженные какими-то неведомыми лучами, брызнувшими из носовых частей этих летающих тарелок, зарылись в воду возле кораблей. Я в это время находился на палубе Касабланки. Я ничего не понимал. Эти предметы не издавали ни единого звука. Они безмолвно носились между кораблями и беспрерывно плевались убийственным огнем. Внезапно эсминец «Мердок», находившийся от нас в 10 кабельтовых, полыхнул ярким пламенем и стал тонуть. С других кораблей, несмотря на опасность, немедленно были посланы к месту катастрофы спасательные шлюпки и катера. Весь кошмар продолжался около 20 минут. Когда летающие тарелки снова нырнули под воду, мы стали подсчитывать потери. Они были ужасающими. Кто был хозяином этих тарелок? Неужели нацистская Германия?
All right, y'all. So in the first part of that documentary, they were kind of going over a few things that we've, you know, sort of touched on in this video already. It was mostly about the mission Admiral Byrd took to Antarctica to basically destroy the secret base that the Third Reich had already built. And it explained that, you know, they caught word that a lot of the top scientists and engineers and members of the Third Reich weren't, you know, they weren't coming up dead, they weren't coming up missing. So they basically, you know, they basically figured out that they were hiding in Antarctica. And I think the most interesting part about that first piece of that documentary is the fact that they talked about the two flying saucers that I brought up that came out of the water at speeds that they had never seen, and the fact that the flying saucers were also completely silent as they flew by the ships that were on sea. Now, the Germans they admitted that that was not their technology. So this brings up the question that kind of goes back to the last video about UFOs that I did on the channel, and where, you know, we had the clip where they were talking about, you know, the UFOs being spiritual in a sense, and then the UFOs being physical in a sense as well. So, you know, this kind of goes to what you want to believe is actually going on in the world that we live in this universe. Do we believe that these UFOs, these flying discs, they're not even UFOs, they're flying discs because they were identified. They're not unidentified objects. They are identified. They're flying discs. What's not identified is who is controlling those discs. Who is flying those discs, if anyone is even flying them at all. So we got to factor that in as well, because if these discs are that advanced, there may not be anyone that's actually flying the disc. That could be the trick right there. You know, so we can't say it's flown by an alien or it's flown by a fallen angel. It could, you know, it may not even be flown by a being at all. But it raises the question that, you know, is there truly an advanced race out there beyond or beneath the Antarctica ice walls that just haven't shown themselves to humanity? It's not to say that that race is an alien race, but they're just much more advanced than humans are ready for. Because if you think about this, this is back in the 30s and 40s that, you know, this kind of technology was already in place through whoever was controlling those flying discs. Because it's basically, at this point, it's unexplainable without any, you know, further accounts or any further knowledge on what was actually controlling the disc. Now, without going and kind of repeating some of the same things that we've already talked about, I'm going to save y'all a couple of minutes from watching that documentary. And this part, the next part of the documentary is actually about what I'm going to read y'all right now. We'll just read it off of this article. So, you know, I don't want to force y'all to listen to that documentary too much and watch the subtitles, but I am going to go back to it so we can catch other just catch other things in the documentary that I couldn't find anywhere else. So the next portion of that documentary was about the Anunnabi Society. Now, there were like three main secret societies that were all around the Third Reich and the Germans back in those days. We already talked about the Thule Society and the Vril Society. Now we talk about the Anunnabi Secret Society. It was created in 1935 by Heinrich Himmler and Hermann Wirth and Richard Dare. These two guys, they were obsessed with the knowledge of Atlantis. Now, a lot of us are familiar with Atlantis. Some people, you know, have a lot of different theories about Atlantis. You know, they were like the masters of crystal technology. Atlantis was a crystal city, or Atlantis was actually the whole world and not just one continent. You know, there's a bunch of different theories about Atlantis, right? So these people were actually obsessed with Atlantis because they thought that their race, you know, basically where Germans spawned from, basically, they thought that they were the original race of that land, Atlantis, as in Germans, right? So it says, officially, Anunnabi was registered as a study society for primordial intellectual history and German ancestral heritage. Yet, the organization was funded by members in the Third Reich, and its true goal was to research the cultural history and characteristics of the Aryan race in an effort to prove that they were godlike advanced race from the Germans, from which the Germans were descended from. Continuing on, with their obsession for the occult, one of Himmler's dreams was to create a new religion that would replace the Christian religion in Germany. So this is why, you know, they sought out to basically research and find whether or not they were descendants from this, you know, advanced civilization that they believe inhabited Atlantis. They did a lot of archaeological excavations through Germany, Greece, Poland, Iceland, Romania, Croatia, and other countries, including Africa and the occupied part of Russia. One of the research institutes of Anunnabi was dealing with the so-called world ice theory. This goes to Antarctica, which was suggested that there were several moons in different orbits around Earth. Scientists within the organization also supported that Earth was created when a giant chunk of ice collided with the sun. Now, that just sounds pretty foolish, but it says Anunnabi also intensively searched for Atlantis and the Holy Grail all over the world, Bizarre as it may sound, occultists believed that the Aryans, the white Nordic superior race of pure blood, had escaped the mythical Atlantis when it sunk after being, wait for it, struck by a divine thunderbolt and inhabited Earth. So they had some wild beliefs. Basically, I just wanted to save y'all a few minutes from watching that documentary, because the documentary is kind of really reading you exactly what I just read y'all. But this was basically another inside, you know, this was another inside secret society of the Third Reich that a lot of people didn't know about. And these were the guys that were actually behind trying to, you know, find their ancestral knowledge. This is why they went to Antarctica. This is where it all began, you know. So this video just kind of takes us back to finding out why all of this stuff even took place. You know, it's originally why I said this wasn't going to be like a, you know, one of those generic videos. We were really going to dig deep and find out the why, find out the history of what Antarctica details and why, you know, so many countries, so many researchers, so many archaeologists, so many, you know, occultists want to know what's actually going on, you know, and the fact that Germany and the Nazis say that they actually made contact with the advanced civilization that is in Antarctica. Rather or not, we want to believe that there's some kind of portal or wormhole that takes you to the advanced civilization, or there's just an opening that takes you to inner Earth, and, you know, you get to see all kind of different life, and it's nothing like what we would expect. That's left up to your belief, because at the end of the day, you know, it's all speculation. We can't prove it, but I'd be damned. I would be damned to say that, you know, I'm not believing it. You know what I'm saying? Because, man, this world is way more, you know, truth is way more stranger than fiction, man. So who really knows what's out there? But before I continue going on, there's a couple more minutes of that documentary I want y'all to watch. So we're going to get right back to it. Check this out.
Без сомнения, сотрудникам АННРБ была известна удивительная карта, обнаруженная историками в 1929 году. Карта эта создана в начале 16 века прославленным турецким адмиралом Пири Рейсом. Поражает то, что на ней подробнейшим образом нанесен северный берег Антарктиды. И это за 300 лет до официального открытия этого континента. В заметках на карте адмирал сообщает, что он составил ее по многочисленным источникам, некоторым из которых было не менее 3000 лет. Но самое загадочное в другом. Береговая линия Антарктиды изображена без ледяного покрова. Эта карта будоражит воображение и сегодня. Вот вердикт специалистов военно-воздушных сил США. Береговая линия была нанесена на карту до того, как была покрыта льдом. Лед на этой территории имеет толщину приблизительно 1.5 километра. У нас нет догадок, каким образом эти данные могли быть получены в 1513 году. Международные экспедиции, проверявшие карту Пири Рейса, пришли к выводу, она точнее карт, составленных в 20 веке. А сейсмическая разведка подтвердила то, о чем до последнего времени не догадывались. Некоторые горы, которые считались частью единого массива, оказались на самом деле островами, как это и было указано на старой карте. Можно представить, какое впечатление в 30-е годы произвела карта Пири Рейса на приверженцев арийской теории. Прежде всего, она вселяла надежду в поисках техномагического наследия атлантов. Ведь по одной из гипотез, Антарктида – это бывшая Атлантида, оказавшаяся подо льдом в результате смещения полюсов. Вылетающие из-под воды светящиеся тарелки, шары, сигары. Подобные объекты над полярными и прилегающими к ним районами – не редкость. Северные страны, Южная Америка, Австралия, Южная Африка – везде наблюдаются неопознанные летающие объекты. Сообщения о них регулярно поступали и в военно-морскую разведку СССР.
Мне, как начальнику разведки флотилии, поступали периодические доклады о таких обнаруженных объектах в виде донесений очевидцев. Было бы неправильно думать, что неопознанные летающие объекты наблюдались только на севере. Они наблюдались и по всей Атлантике, даже в Южной Атлантике, в районе Антарктиды. В частности, мне известен один случай, когда они наблюдались в районе островов Южной Георгии. Тогда рыбаки обнаружили вылетевший из-под воды объект, который успели сфотографировать, и он показан на этих картинках.
Несмотря на сильный ветер, объект довольно долго оставался на одном месте. Это явно было не облако и не воздушный шар. Наблюдали над островом Южная Георгия и весьма странные летающие объекты. Вот лишь одно из свидетельств.
Этот диск висел над островом и наблюдался в достаточно длительное время, как в светлое время перед заходом солнца, так и после захода солнца. В течение 1,5-2 часов объект имел достаточно правильную круглую форму, и на нем выделялся равнобедренный треугольник. В ночное время этот треугольник не только светился, но и у основания наблюдались вот такие огоньки, как будто это работали двигатели. Хотя объект и находился на одном и том же месте. Вот наблюдение этих объектов происходило как раз в 1979 году.
За 3 года до этого, в 1976 году, японские исследователи с помощью новейшей аппаратуры засекли одновременно 19 круглых объектов, которые спикировали из космоса на Антарктиду и пропали с экранов. Что это за объекты и откуда они появляются? Сегодня возникла весьма неожиданная версия. В конце 80-х годов большой резонанс в мировой науке получили работы ведущего американского астрофизика Кипа Торна и его коллег. Они обосновали возможность практически мгновенного перемещения в пространстве и путешествия во времени.
Они выдвинули идею червячных переходов, чрезвычайно интригующую, согласно которой черные дыры находятся в непосредственной близости от нашей планеты и принимают форму червячных переходов. Эти червячные переходы, в принципе, позволяют совершать межгалактический, межзвездный полет.
Как заявляют сами ученые, их работа имеет прикладное значение. В частности, для создания машины времени и обеспечения межгалактических перелетов. Кип Торн пришел к выводу, что вблизи Земли находится вход в червячный тоннель, ведущий в район звезды Вега.
По всей видимости, тогда уже американцы хорошо знали или представляли себе, каким образом происходит появление и исчезновение НЛО в атмосфере нашей планеты.
В 1992 году на Аляске началось строительство мощного радиоэлектронного комплекса под названием ХААР. Официально для изучения ионосферы и развития систем противоракетной обороны. Неофициально – для отработки новых видов оружия – геофизического, климатического, психотронного. По сути, массивная лучевая пушка – этакая глобальная микроволновка. Однако, похоже, и это не все.
На сегодняшний день мы можем смело предположить, что главное назначение этой станции – это именно поиск этого входа в червячную дыру. То есть американцы пришли к выводу, что именно в этом полярном районе и может находиться вход в червячную дыру. Станция своими радиоизлучениями позволяет определить конфигурацию этой червячного перехода и найти туда вход или выход.
В 1998 году комплекс на Аляске был введен в действие. Примерно такой же излучатель построен в Норвегии. На очереди третий, еще более мощный, в Гренландии.
К началу 90-х годов технические возможности позволили именно сосредоточиться только на одном, вот на Аляскинском портале, как входе-выходе контроля за движением НЛО над нашей планетой. Не надо было уже устанавливать станции слежения по штатам, на других территориях. В принципе, достаточно было взять под контроль один портал.
Однако у Земли два полюса. Какова роль каждого из них с точки зрения этой гипотезы?
Ну, например, они используются одновременно для входа и для выхода. Или, например, Аляскинский портал используется для входа, а Антарктида для выхода. Или наоборот, через Антарктиду НЛО приходят в атмосферу нашей планеты, а через Аляскинский, через Северный портал они уходят из нашей планеты.
Теория туннельных эффектов не противоречит тому, что Северный полюс нашей Земли является входом, а Южный полюс нашей Земли является выходом для канала энергетически информационно, связывающего нашу планету с другими планетами и звездами. Не исключено, что эти свойства полюсов неопознанно летающие объекты используют для связи с другими частями Вселенной. Во всяком случае, это подлежит большому серьезному изучению.
И ведь не случайно, например, хорошо известный факт, что большая часть сотрудников американских антарктических станций, это являются сотрудниками Агентства национальной безопасности Соединенных Штатов Америки, и то есть военно-технической разведки, электронной разведки и сотрудники Центрального разведывательного управления, которые составляют костяк исследовательского персонала американских антарктических станций.
Возможно, ученые Третьего Рейха тоже предполагали, что Арктика и Антарктида – не просто земные полюса. И, может, не случайно в нацистской Германии была столь популярна теория полой Земли, где полюса представлялись воротами в какое-то другое пространство. Может, в основе этой безумной идеи лежали смутные представления о чем-то похожем на сегодняшние червячные переходы? И именно возможность у путешествий во времени и пространстве притягивала к себе немцев Антарктида. Шестой континент продолжает хранить свои тайны. К ним добавляются все новые вопросы. И с годами их не становится меньше. Были ли работы по созданию летающих дисков свернуты после войны? Или продолжились в других, тайных районах земного шара? Стоит ли все неопознанные летающие объекты списывать на современные тайные разработки? Ведь подобные объекты наблюдали очень давно, даже во времена Александра Македонского. Что за объекты выныривали из-под воды и атаковали эскадру адмирала Бёрда? Великие неизвестные, к сотрудничеству с которыми так стремились...
Alright, y'all. Now we are at the conclusion of this video. If you stuck around this long, I really appreciate you. Now to quickly... Going to the map. The map was drawn in 1513 from a collection of other maps that were drawn around the world. Antarctica wasn't discovered until 1733. That there is a mystery in itself on how they were actually able to, you know, draw something that hasn't been discovered yet. They told us it hadn't been discovered, so no one had actually been there. You know, rather that's the truth or not, that's left up to be kind of decided or speculated on. But they drew it with accuracy, though. So the people that actually discovered Antarctica, they said that map was drawn with just about 90-something percent direct accuracy. But it was also drawn without the ice walls. So that lets us know Antarctica is just a layer of one of the edges of this Earth. There are multiple layers, basically, of this Earth. Antarctica, I believe, is the first one. I believe it continues on and on. There's more land past Antarctica that's probably not inhabitable at all. But you have to think about the world in a multi-layer of circles, which is why this is a flat plane that we live on. It's not a ball. The Earth is stationary with multiple layers, Antarctica being the first one. Then there's probably 2, 3, 4 more before you even get to where the firmament caps off of this world, which the firmament is a translucent material that we cannot see. The map from 1513 tells us the truth. There were no ice walls, so that means that's not the end of this world. It continues on and on, which is one of the big reasons on why they guard Antarctica. No one can go past that area. They themselves probably don't go past. They probably don't go any further than Antarctica, because I'm sure they can't, because they don't actually know what's out there. And if they do, they're probably not allowed to go any further than that. The Earth is huge. In a sense, the Earth is almost disguising itself within itself, you know? Everything happens for a reason on this planet. The planet is alive, so it probably disguises itself, you know, within itself, you know? Nature itself disguises the true shape and form of this world. Nature is not just used to provide weather. It also disguises the rest of this earth. Because no human can see the full creation that God made. He doesn't allow us to. No man has the full, you know, shape and, you know, like no man has ever seen the true shape of this earth. We never will. We can only speculate on it. But I guarantee you, there are multiple layers. Multiple layers. Just think about the earth going in a circle of multiple layers. The flat plane. That's what we live on. So I thought that map, you know, in itself, it tells a lot of truth. Now, going on to the last part of this video, where they were talking about UFOs being spotted way before Antarctica, coming out of the ocean, that leaves, you know, more mystery that, you know, they didn't go to Antarctica and see it for the first time. It was already spotted hundreds of years ago from the 1940s that flying discs were coming up out of the ocean. And, you know, not just the ocean, they were being spotted everywhere in the clouds, so on and so on. So clearly, the UFO thing, the whole entire UFO thing is a fact. We just don't know who is controlling those UFOs and if anyone is actually inside of the UFOs. Because if they are that advanced, they're able to come out of the ocean. They're able to use portals to come in and out of our dimension, our realm, which is why HARP was made. The real truth on why, the clandestine truth on why HARP was made, to study the wormholes, the portals that these UFOs use to exit and leave our planet. Now that was crazy that they actually used HARP for that. That's the real truth on HARP. But like I was saying, you got to remember, these UFOs are also spiritual in a sense. So there actually may not be anyone that is controlling the UFOs. There may not be anyone inside of the UFO. You have to think about that. If they're able to do what they're doing at will, if they're that advanced, I almost 99% believe that no one is controlling it. There's no one actually inside it. Don't get me wrong. It's being controlled by something, but there may not actually be a being inside of the UFO. That's what we're not thinking about. We're thinking about someone in there driving the UFO and flying through space like nobody ever seen before, coming out of the ocean, all kind of stuff. But if they're that advanced, we have to factor in that there may be a central control system of UFOs and not just, you know, these beings or these fallen angels inside of the UFO. You know, it wouldn't truly make sense for it to be that way. Or at the end of the day, it could be some advanced civilization, and that's just what they do. That's just what they do, and it's just a mystery that we maybe will never find out in our lifetimes. I'm not really sure. But it is very interesting, and it's very fun to study and research this stuff. You know, we've come to the end of this video. Like I said, I really appreciate you if you stuck around. I learned a lot researching this video. It was fun to do it. You know, this is fresh. It's a very fresh topic. And I feel like we covered it very well. We've unearthed some things that a lot of people didn't know, including myself. So, yeah, man. With that being said, y'all let me know what y'all think about the video. You know, get a conversation going back and forth. Maybe we could do a part two if it calls for it. And then, yeah, man. With that being said, it's Black Balloon. And I'm gonna see y'all soon.